This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Pretties by Scott Westerfeld, read by Emily Tremaine.
Part 1. Sleeping Beauty. Remember that the most beautiful things in the world are the most useless. John Ruskin, The Stones of Venice. 1. Criminal. Getting dressed was always the hardest part of the afternoon. The invitation to Valentino Mansion said semi-formal, but it was the semi-part that was tricky. Like a night without a party, semi opened up too many possibilities. Bad enough for boys, for whom it could mean a jacket and tie, skipping the tie with certain kinds of collars, or all white and shirt sleeves, but only on summer afternoons, or any number of long coats, waistcoats, tailcoats, kilts, or really nice sweaters. For girls, though, the definition simply exploded, as definitions usually did here in New Pretty Town. Tally almost preferred formal white tie or black tie parties. The clothes were less comfortable, and the parties no fun until everyone got drunk, but at least you didn't have to think so hard about getting dressed. Semi-formal. Semi-formal, she said, her eyes drifting over the expanse of her open closet, the carousel stuttering back and forth as it tried to keep up with Tally's random eye mouse clicks, setting clothes swaying on their hangers. Yes, semi was definitely a bogus word. Is it even a word? Tally asked aloud. Semi? It felt strange in her mouth, which was as dry as cotton because of last night. Only half of one, the room said, probably thinking it was clever. Figures, Tally muttered. She collapsed back onto her bed and stared up at the ceiling, feeling the room threaten to spin a little. It didn't seem fair, having to get worked up over half a word. Make it go away, she said. The room misunderstood and slid shut the wall over her closet. Tally didn't have the strength to explain that she'd really meant her hangover, which was sprawled in her head like an overweight cat, sullen and squishy and disinclined to budge. Last night, she and Paris had gone skating with a bunch of other crims, trying out the new rink hovering over Nefertiti Stadium. The sheet of ice, held aloft by a grid of lifters, was thin enough to see through, and was kept transparent by a horde of little Zambonis darting among the skaters like nervous water bugs. The fireworks exploding in the stadium below made it glow like some kind of schizoid stained glass that changed colors every few seconds. They all had to wear bungee jackets in case anyone broke through. No one ever did, of course, but the thought that at any moment the world could fall away with a sudden crack kept Tally drinking plenty of champagne. Zane, who was pretty much the leader of the crims, got bored and tipped a whole bottle onto the ice. He said that alcohol had a lower freezing point than water, so it might send someone tumbling down into the fireworks. But he hadn't poured out enough to save Tally's head this morning. The room made the special sound that meant another crim was calling. Hey. Hey, Tally. Shay La. Tally struggled up onto one elbow. I need help. The party? I know. What's the deal with semi-formal anyway? Shay laughed. Tally Wa, you are so missing. Didn't you get the ping? What ping? It went out hours ago. Tally glanced at her interface ring, still on her bedside table. She never wore it out at night, an old habit from when she'd been an ugly, sneaking out all the time. It sat there softly pulsing, still muted for sleep time. Oh, just woke up. Well, forget semi anything. They changed the bash to fancy dress, We have to come up with costumes. Tally checked the time. Just before 5 in the afternoon. What? In 3 hours? Yeah, I know. I'm all over the place with mine. It's so shaming. Can I come down? Please. In 5? Sure. Bring breakfast. Bye. Tally let her head fall back onto the pillow. The bed was spinning like a hoverboard now, the day just starting and already wiping out. She slid on her interface ring and listened angrily as the ping played, saying that no one would be admitted tonight without a really bubbly costume. 3 hours to come up with something decent, and everyone else had a huge head start. Sometimes, it felt like being a real criminal had been much, much simpler. Shay had breakfast in tow, lobster omelets, toast, hash browns, corn fritters, grapes, chocolate muffins, and bloodies. More food than a whole packet of calorie purgers could erase. The overburdened tray shivered in the air, its lifters trembling like a littlie after school, first day ever. Shay, are we going as blimps or something? Shay giggled. No, but you sounded bad. And you have to be bubbly tonight. All the crims are coming to vote you in. Great, bubbly, Tally sighed, relieving the tray of a Bloody Mary. She frowned at the first sip. Not salty enough. No problem, Shay said, scraping off the caviar decorating an omelet and stirring it in. Ew, fishy. Caviar is good with anything. Shay took another spoonful and put it straight into her mouth, closing her eyes to chew the little fish eggs. She twisted her ring to start some music. Tally swallowed and drank more bloody, which at least stopped the room from spinning. The chocolate muffins were starting to smell good. Then she'd move on to the hash browns. Then the omelet. She might even try the caviar. Breakfast was the meal when Tally felt most like she had to make up for time she'd lost out in the wild. A good breakfast binge made her feel in control, as if a storm of city-made tastes could erase the months of stews and spog bowl. The music was new and made her heart beat faster. Thanks, Shayla. You are totally life-saving. No problem, Tallywa. So, where were you last night anyway? Shay just smiled, like she'd done something bad. What? New boy? Shay shook her head, batted her eyes. You didn't surge again, did you? Tally asked, and Shay giggled. You did? You're not supposed to more than once a week. Could you be any more missing? It's okay, Tallywa, just local. Where? Shay's face didn't look any different. Was the surgery hidden under her pajamas? Look closer. Shay's long lashes fluttered again. Tally leaned forward, staring into the perfect copper eyes, wide and speckled with jewel dust, and her heart beat still faster. A month after coming to New Prettytown, Tally was still awestruck by other pretties' eyes. They were so huge and welcoming, bright with interest. Shay's lush pupils seemed to murmur, I'm listening to you. You fascinate me. They narrowed down the world to only Tally, all alone in the radiance of Shay's attention. It was even weirder with Shay, because Tally had known her back in ugly days, before the operation had made her this way. Closer. Tally took a steadying breath, the room spinning again, but in a good way. She gestured for the windows to transpare a little more, and in the sunlight, she saw the new additions. Ooh, pretty making. Bolder than all the other implanted glitter, 12 tiny rubies ringed each of Shay's pupils, glowing softly red against emerald irises. Bubbly, huh? Yeah, but hang on. Are the bottom left ones different? Tally squinted harder. One jewel in each eye seemed to be flickering, a tiny white candle in the coppery depths. It's 5 o'clock, Shay said. Get it? It took Tally a second to remember how to read the big clock tower in the center of town. But that's 7. Wouldn't bottom right be 5 o'clock? Shay snorted. They run counterclockwise, silly. I mean, so boring otherwise. A laugh bubbled up in Tally. So wait, you have jewels in your eyes, and they tell time, and they go backward? Isn't that maybe one thing too many, Shay? Tally immediately regretted what she'd said. The expression that clouded Shay's face was tragic, sucking away the radiance of a moment before. She looked about to cry, except without puffy eyes or a red nose. New surge was always a delicate topic, like a new hairstyle, almost. You hate them, Shay softly accused. Of course I don't. Like I said, totally pretty-making. Really? Very. And it's good they go backward. Shay's smile returned, and Tally breathed a sigh of relief, still not believing herself. It was the kind of mistake only brand new pretties made, and she'd had the operation over a month ago. Why was she still saying bogus things? If she made a comment like that tonight, one of the crims might vote against her. It only took one veto to shut you out. And then she'd be alone, almost like running away again. Shay said, maybe we should go as clock towers tonight, in honor of my new eyeballs. Tally laughed, knowing the lame joke meant she was forgiven. She and Shay had been through a lot together, after all. Have you talked to Paris and Fausto? Shay nodded. They said we're all supposed to dress criminal. They've got an idea already, but it's a secret. That's so bogus. Like they were such bad boys. All they ever did in the ugly days was sneak out and maybe cross the river a few times. They never even made it to the smoke. The song ended just then, and Tally's last word fell into sudden silence. She tried to think of what to say, but the conversation just faded out, like fireworks in a dark sky. The next song seemed to take a long time to start. But when it did, she was relieved and said, "Crim costumes should be easy, Shayla. We're the two biggest criminals in town." Shay and Tally tried for 2 hours, making the hole in the wall spit out costumes and trying them on. They thought of bandits, but didn't really know what one looked like. In all the old bandit movies in the wall screen, the bad guys didn't look crim, just retarded. Pirates were much better dressing, but Shay didn't want to wear a patch over one of her new eyeballs. Going as hunters was another idea, but the hole in the wall had this thing about guns, even fake ones. Tally thought of famous dictators from history, but most of them turned out to be men and fashion missing. "Maybe we should be rusties," Shay said. "In school, they were always the bad guys." "But they mostly looked like us," I thought, "except ugly." "I don't know. We could cut down trees or burn oil or something." Tally laughed. "This is a costume, Shayla, not a lifestyle." Shay spread her arms and said more things, trying to be bubbly. "We could smoke tobacco or drive cars." But the hole in the wall wouldn't give them cigarettes or cars. It was fun, though, hanging out with Shay and trying things on, then snorting and giggling and tossing the costumes back into the recycler. Tally loved seeing how she looked in new clothes, even silly ones. Part of her could still remember back before, when looking in the mirror had been painful, her eyes too close together and nose too small, hair frizzy all the time. Now it was like someone gorgeous stood across from Tally, following her every move. Someone whose face was in perfect balance, whose skin glowed even with a total hangover, whose body was beautifully proportioned and muscled. Someone whose silvery eyes matched anything she wore. But someone with bogus taste in costumes. After 2 hours, they were lying on the bed, which was spinning again. "Everything sucks, Shayla. Why does everything suck? They'll never vote me in if I can't even come up with a non-bogus costume." Shay took her hand. "Don't worry, Tallywa. You're already famous. There's no reason to be nervous." "That's easy for you to say." Even though they'd been born on the same day, Shay had become pretty weeks and weeks before Tally. She'd been a full-fledged crim for almost a month now. "It's not going to be a problem," Shay said. "Anyone who used to hang out with special circumstances is a natural crim." A feeling went through Tally when Shay said that. Like a ping, but hurting. Still, I hate not being bubbly. It's Paris's and Fausta's fault for not telling us what they're wearing. Let's just wait till they get here and copy them. They deserve it, Shay agreed. Want a drink? I think so. Tally was too spinning to go anywhere, so Shay told the breakfast tray to go and get some champagne. When Paris and Fausto came in, they were on fire. It was really just sparklers wound into their hair and stuck onto their clothes, making safety flames flicker all over them. Fausto kept laughing because it tickled. They were both wearing bungee jackets. Their costume was that they just jumped from the roof of a burning building. Fantastic, Shay said. Hysterical, Tally agreed, but then asked, but how is that crim? Don't you remember, Paris said, when you crashed a party last summer and got away by stealing a bungee jacket and jumping off the roof? Best ugly trick in history. Sure, but why are you on fire? Tally said. I mean, it's not crim if the building's really on fire. Shay was giving Tally a look like she was saying something bogus again. We couldn't just wear bungee jackets, Fausta said. Being on fire is much bubblier. Yeah, Paris said. But Tally could tell he saw what she meant, and was sad now. She wished she hadn't mentioned it. Stupid Tally. The costumes really were bubbly. They put the sparklers out to save them for the party, and Shay told the hole in the wall to make two more jackets. Hey, that's copying, Fausto complained, but it turned out not to matter. The hole wouldn't do costume bungee jackets, in case someone forgot and jumped off something and splatted. It couldn't make a real jacket. You had to ask requisition for anything complicated or permanent. And requisition wouldn't send any up because there wasn't a fire. Shay snorted. The mansion is being totally bogus today. So where'd you get those? Tally asked. They're real, Paris smiled, fingering his jacket. We stole them from the roof. So they are crim, Tally said, and jumped off the bed to hug him. With Paris in her arms, it didn't feel like the party was going to suck, or that anyone was going to vote against her. His big brown eyes beamed down into hers, and he lifted her up and squeezed her hard. She'd always felt this close to Paris back in ugly days, playing tricks and growing up together. It was bubbly to feel this way right now. All those weeks that Tally had been lost in the wild, all she'd ever wanted was to be back here with Paris. Pretty. In New Pretty Town. It was totally stupid being unhappy today. Or any day. Probably just too much champagne. Best friends forever, she whispered to him as he set her down. Hey, what's this thing? Shay said. She was deep in Tally's closet, poking around for ideas. She held up a shapeless mass of wool. Oh, that. Tally let her arms fall from Paris. That's my sweater from the smoke, remember? The sweater looked strange, not like she remembered. It was messy, and you could see where the human hands had knitted the different pieces together. People in the smoke didn't have holes in the wall. They had to make their own things, and people, it turned out, weren't very good at making things. You didn't recycle it? No, I think it's made of weird stuff. Like, the hole can't use it. Shay held up the sweater to her nose and inhaled. Wow, it still smells like the smoke. Campfires and the stews we always ate, remember? Paris and Fausto went over to smell it. They'd never been out of the city, except for school trips to the rusty ruins. They certainly hadn't gotten as far as the smoke, where everyone had to work all day making stuff, and growing, or even killing their own food, and everyone stayed ugly after their 16th birthday. Ugly until they died, even. Of course, the smoke didn't exist anymore, thanks to Tally in special circumstances. Hey, I know Tally, Shay said. Let's go as smokies tonight. That would be totally criminal, Fausto said, his eyes full of admiration. The three looked at Tally, all of them thrilled with the idea, and even though another nasty ping went through her, She knew it would be bogus not to agree. And that with a totally bubbly costume like a real-life smoky sweater to wear, there was no way anyone would vote against her. Because Tali Youngblood was a natural crim. Bash. The bash was in Valentino Mansion, the oldest building in New Prettytown. It sprawled along the river only a few stories high, but was topped by a transmission tower visible halfway across the island. Inside, the walls were made of real stone, so the rooms couldn't talk, but the mansion had a long history of giant, fabulous bashes. The wait to become a Valentino resident was at least forever. Paris, Fausto, Shay, and Tali walked down through the pleasure gardens, which were already bubbling with people headed to the bash. Tali saw an angel with beautiful feathered wings that must have been requisitioned months ago, which was so cheating, and a bunch of new pretties wearing fat suits and masks that gave them triple chins. A mostly naked clique of bashers were pretending to be pre-rusties, building bonfires and drumming, establishing their own little satellite party, which was what bashers always did. Paris and Fausto kept arguing about exactly when to light themselves on fire again. They wanted to make an entrance, but also save their sparklers for the other crims. As they got closer to the mansion's noise and glimmer, Tally's nerves started to jump. The smoky costumes didn't look like much. Tali wore her old sweater and Shay a copy, along with rough pants, knapsacks, and handmade-looking shoes that Tali had described to the hole in the wall, remembering someone wearing them in the smoke. For unbathed authenticity, they had rubbed dirt into their clothes and faces, which had seemed bubbly during the walk down, but now just felt dirty. At the door were two Valentinos dressed up as wardens, making sure no one got inside without a costume. They stopped Fausto and Paris at first, but laughed when the two set themselves on fire, waving them through. They just shrugged at Shay and Tali, but let them in. "Wait till the other crims see us," Shay said. "They'll get it." The four pushed through the crowds and into a total confusion of costumes. Tali saw snowmen, soldiers, Thumb Game characters, and a whole pretty committee of scientists carrying face crafts. Historical figures were everywhere in crazy clothes from all over the world, which reminded Tali how different from one another everyone used to look back when there were way too many people. A lot of the older new pretties were dressed in modern costumes. Doctors, wardens, builders, or politicians. Whatever they hoped to become after having the middle pretty operation. A bunch of firefighters laughingly tried to extinguish Paris and Fausto's flames, but only succeeded in annoying them. "Where are they?" Shay kept asking, but the stone walls didn't answer. "This is so missing. How do people live here?" "I think they carry hand phones all the time," Fausto said. "We should have recued one." The problem was that in Valentino Mansion, you couldn't just call people by asking. The rooms were old and dumb, so it was like being outside. Tali placed one palm against the wall as they walked, liking how cool the ancient stones felt. For a moment, they reminded her of things out in the wild, rough and silent and unchanging. She wasn't really dying to find the other crims. They'd all be looking at her and wondering how to vote. They wandered the crowded hallways, peeking into rooms full of old-timey astronauts and explorers. Tali counted 5 Cleopatras and 2 Lillian Russells. There were even a few Rudolph Valentinos. It turned out the mansion was named after a natural pretty from back in the rusty days. Other cliques had organized theme costumes, teams of jocks carrying hockey sticks and wobbly on hover skates. Twisters as sick puppies wearing big cone-shaped plastic collars. And of course the swarm was everywhere, all jabbering to one another on their interface rings. Swarmers had skin antennas surged into them so they could call one another from anywhere, even inside Valentino Mansion's dumb walls. The other cliques always made fun of the swarm, who were afraid to go anywhere except in giant groups. They were all dressed as houseflies with big bug eyes, which at least was sense-making. No other Krims appeared among the tumult of costumes, and Tali began to wonder if they'd all ditch the party, rather than vote for her. Paranoid thoughts began to plague her, and she kept catching glimpses of someone lurking in the shadows, half hidden by the crowds, but always there. Every time she turned around, though, the gray silk costume slipped out of sight. Tali couldn't tell whether it was a boy or a girl. The figure wore a mask, scary, but also beautiful, its cruel wolf eyes glinting in the low, flickering party lights. The plastic face jarred something in Tali, a painful memory that took a moment to gel. Then she realized what the costume was supposed to be. An agent of special circumstances. Tali leaned back against one of the cool stone walls, remembering the gray silk coveralls that specials wore and the cruel pretty faces they were given. The sight made her head spin, which was the way Tali always felt when she thought back to her days in the wild. Seeing the costume here in New Pretty Town didn't make any sense. Besides herself and Shay, hardly anyone had ever seen a special. To most people, they were just rumors and urban legends, blamed whenever anything weird happened. Specials kept themselves well hidden. Their job was to protect the city from outside threats, like soldiers and spies back in the days of the Rusties. But only total criminals like Tali Youngblood ever met them in person. Still, someone had done a pretty good job on the costume. He or she must have seen a real special at some point. But why was the figure following her? Every time Tali turned, it was there, moving with the terrible and predatory grace she remembered from being hunted through the ruins of the smoke on that awful day when they had come to take her back to the city. She shook her head. Thinking of those days always brought up bogus memories that didn't fit together. The specials hadn't hunted Tali, of course. Why would they? They rescued her, bringing her home after she'd left the city to track down Shay. The thought of specials always left her spinning, but that was just because their cruel faces were designed to freak you out, the same way that looking at regular pretties made you feel good. Maybe the figure wasn't following her at all. Maybe it was more than one person, some clique all dressed the same and spread out across the party, which made it feel like one of them was lurking her. That idea was a lot less crazy-making. She caught up with the others and joked with them as they searched for the rest of the Krims. But as Tali kept one eye out for figures in the shadows, she slowly became sure that it wasn't a clique. There was always exactly one, not talking to anybody, totally lurking. And the way the figure moved, so gracefully. Tali told herself to calm down. Special circumstances had no reason to follow her, and it made no sense for a special to come to a costume party dressed as a special. She forced a laugh from herself. It was probably one of the other Krims playing a joke on her, one who'd heard Shay's and Tally's stories 100 times and knew all about special circumstances. If so, it would be totally bogus to go all brain missing in front of everyone. Better to ignore the fake special altogether. Tali looked down at her own costume and wondered if the smoky clothes were helping to freak her out. Shay had been right. The smell of the old, handmade sweater brought back their time outside the city. Days of back-breaking work and nights staying warm by the campfire, mingled with memories of the aging, ugly faces that still brought her awake screaming sometimes. Living in the smoke had totally done a job on Tali's head. No one else mentioned the figure. Were they all in on the joke? Fausto kept worrying that his sparklers were going to run out before any of the other Krims saw them. "Let's see if they're in one of the spires," he said. "At least we can call them from a real building," Paris agreed. Shay snorted and headed toward the nearest door. "Anything to get out of this bogus pile of rocks." The party was spilling outside, anyway, expanding beyond the ancient stone walls. Shay led them toward a party spire at random, through a cluster of hairdos with beehive wigs, each with its own swarm of bumblebees, which were really micro-lifters painted yellow and black in holding patterns around their heads. They didn't get the buzzing sound right, Fausto said. But Tali could tell he was impressed by the costumes. The sparklers in his hair were sputtering out, and people were looking at him like, huh? From inside the party tower, Paris called Zane, who said the Crims were all upstairs. Good guess, Shay. The four of them crammed into the elevator with a surgeon, a trilobite, and two drunken hockey players, struggling to stay upright on hover skates. Get that nervous look off your face, Tallywah, said Shay, squeezing her shoulder. You'll be in, no problem. Zane likes you. Tally managed to smile, wondering if that was really true. Zane was always asking about her ugly days, but he did that with everyone, sucking up the Crim stories with his gold-flecked eyes. Did he really think that Tally Youngblood was anything special? It was clear that someone did. As the elevator doors closed, Tally glimpsed gray silk slipping gracefully through the crowd. Lurker. Most of the other Crims had come as lumberjacks, dressed in plaid and grotesquely muscle-padded, holding big fake chainsaws and glasses of champagne. There were also butchers, a few smokers who'd made their own fake cigarettes, and a hangman with a long noose draped over her shoulder. Zane, who knew a lot about history, had come as some dictator's assistant, who wasn't totally fashion missing, all in tight black with a bubbly red armband. He'd done costume surge to make his lips thin and cheeks sunken, which made him look kind of like a special. They all laughed at Paris's costume and tried to relight Fausto, but only managed to burn a few wisps of his hair, which was totally bogus smelling. It took an anxious moment for them to figure out Tally's and Shay's costumes, but soon the other Crims were crowding in to touch the rough fibers of the handmade sweater and asking if it was itchy. It was, but Tally shook her head. Shay stood close to Zane and got him to notice her new eye surge. "Think they're pretty making?" she asked. "I give them 50 millihellens," he said. This went totally missing on everyone. "A millihellen is enough beauty to launch exactly one ship," Zane explained, and the other Crims all laughed. 50's pretty good. Shay smiled, Zane's praise lighting her face up like champagne. Tally tried to be bubbly, but the thought of the costumed special lurking her was too dizzy-making. After a few minutes, she escaped onto the party spire's balcony to fill her lungs with cold, fresh air. A few hot air balloons were tethered to the spire, hovering like huge black moons in the sky. The hot airs riding in one gondola were shooting Roman candles at the others, laughing as the safety flames roared across the darkness. Then one of the balloons began to rise, the roar of its burner audible above the party noise, its tether dropping to slap against the spire. It lifted on a tiny finger of flame, finally disappearing into the distance. If Shay hadn't introduced her to the Crims, Tally figured she would have been a hot air. They were always drifting off into the night and landing at random places, calling a hover car to pick them up from some distant suburb or even past the city limits. Staring out over the river toward the darkness of Uglyville made Tally's brain much less spinning. It was strange. Her time in the wild was so fuzzy, but Tally could perfectly remember being a young ugly, watching the lights of New Pretty Town from her dorm window and dying to turn 16. She had always imagined herself here on this side, in some high tower with fireworks going off around her, surrounded by pretties and pretty herself. Of course, the Tally of those fantasies had usually been wearing a ball gown, not a woolen sweater and work pants, her face smeared with dirt. She fingered a thread working its way free of the weave, wishing that Shay hadn't found the sweater tonight. Tally wanted to leave the smoke behind, to escape all the tangled memories of running and hiding and feeling like a betrayer. She hated glancing every minute at the elevator door, wondering if the costume special had followed her up here. She wanted to feel totally belonging somewhere, not waiting for the next disaster to strike. Maybe what Shay kept saying was right, and tonight's vote would fix all that. The Crims were one of the tightest cliques in New Prettytown. You had to be voted in, and once you were a Crim, you could always depend on friends and parties and bubbly conversation. No more running for tally. The only catch was, no one could join who hadn't been totally tricky in their ugly days, with good stories to tell about sneaking out and hoverboarding all night and running away. Crims were pretties who hadn't forgotten being uglies, who still enjoyed the practical jokes and criminal tricks that made Uglyville, in its own way, bubbly. What would you give the view? It was Zane, suddenly next to her, looking all of his 2-meter maximum pretty height in the ancient black uniform. Give it? 100 millihelens? 500? Maybe a whole helen? Tally took a steadying breath, looking down at the dark river. I'd give it none. It's Uglyville, after all. Zane chuckled. Now, Tallywah, there's no reason to be nasty about our ugly little brothers and sisters. It's not their fault they aren't as pretty as you. He pushed a stray lock of Tally's hair back around her ear. Not them. The place. Uglyville is a prison. The words felt wrong in her mouth, too serious for a bash. But Zane didn't seem to mind. You escaped, didn't you? He stroked the sweater's strange fibers, like the rest of them kept doing. Was the smoke any better? Tally wondered if he wanted a real answer. She was nervous about saying something bogus. If Zane thought Tally was missing, vetoes would rain down no matter what Shay and Paris had promised. She looked up into his eyes. They were a shimmering metallic gold, reflecting the fireworks like tiny mirrors, and something behind them seemed to pull at Tally. Not just the usual pretty magic, but something that felt serious, as if the bash around them had disappeared. Zane always listened raptly to her smoke stories. He'd heard them all by now, but maybe there was something more he wanted to know. I left the night before my 16th birthday, she said, so I wasn't exactly escaping Uglyville. That's right. Zane released her from his gaze and looked out across the river. You were running from the operation. I was following Shay. I had to stay ugly to find her. To rescue her, he said, then trained his golden eyes on her again. Was that really it? Tally nodded, carefully. Last night's champagne spinning her head. Or maybe tonight's. She looked at the empty glass in her hand and wondered how many she'd had. It was just a thing I had to do. As she said the words, Tally knew that they sounded bogus. A special circumstance? Zane asked, his smile wry. Tally's eyebrows lifted. She wondered what trick Zane had pulled back when he was an ugly. He didn't tell that many stories himself. Though he wasn't that much older than her, Zane never seemed to have to prove that he was a real Crim. He just was. Even with his lips thinned by a costume surge, he was beautiful. His face had been sculpted into more extreme shapes than most, as if the doctors had wanted to push the pretty committee's specs to the limit. His cheekbones were as sharp as arrowheads under his flesh, and his eyebrows arched absurdly high when he was amused. Tally saw with sudden clarity that if any of his features were shifted a few millimeters, he would look terrible. And yet, at the same time, it was impossible to imagine that he had ever been an ugly. Did you ever go to the Rusty Ruins? She asked. Back when you were young? Almost every night, last winter. In winter? I love the ruins covered with snow, he said. It makes the edges softer, adding mega helens to the view. Oh. Tally remembered traveling across the wild in early autumn. How cold it had been. Sounds totally freezing. I could never get anyone else to come with me. His eyes narrowed. When you talk about the ruins, you never mention meeting anyone there.
Meeting someone?
Tali closed her eyes, finding herself suddenly balance missing. She leaned against the balcony rail and took a deep breath.
Yeah, he said. Did you ever?
The empty champagne glass slipped from her hand and tumbled into the blackness.
Look out below, Zane murmured, a smile on his lips.
A tinkling crash rose up from the darkness, surprise laughter spreading from it like ripples from a stone in water. It sounded 1,000 kilometers away. Tali took in more breaths of the cold night air, trying to regain her composure. Her stomach was doing flip-flops. It was so shaming to be like this, about to throw breakfast after a few lousy glasses of champagne.
It's okay, Tali, Zane whispered. Just let yourself be bubbly.
Tali realized how bogus that was, having to be told to stay bubbly. But even through his costume surge, Zane's gaze had softened, as if he really did want her to relax. She turned away from the drop into emptiness, gripping the guardrail with both hands behind her. Shay and Paris were also on the balcony now. She was surrounded by all her new crim friends, protected, and part of the group. But they were watching her carefully, too. Maybe everyone was expecting something special from her tonight.
I never saw anyone out there, Tali said. Someone was supposed to come, but never did.
She didn't hear Zane's response. The lurker had appeared again, across the crowded spire, standing still and staring straight at her. The mask's flashing eyes seemed to acknowledge her gaze for a moment. Then the figure turned and slipped among the white coats of the costumed pretty committee, disappearing behind their giant face graphs of every major pretty type. And even though Tali realized it was a bogus thing to do, she pushed away from Zane and through the crowd, because there was no way she could pull herself together tonight until she found out who this person was, crim or special or random new pretty. She had to know why someone was throwing special circumstances in her face. Tali dodged between white coats and bounced like a pinball through a clique all dressed in fat suits, their softly padded bellies spinning her in circles. She bowled over most of a hockey team, who wobbled on their slippery hover skates like littlies. Glimpses of gray teased Tali from just ahead as she ran, but the crowd was thick and in frantic motion, and by the time she reached the central column of the spire, the figure had disappeared. Glancing at the lights above the elevator door, she saw that it was on its way up, not down. The fake special was still around, somewhere in the spire. Then Tali noticed the door to the emergency stairs, bright red and plastered with warnings that an alarm would sound if you opened it. She looked around again, still no gray figure. Whoever it was had to have escaped down the stairs. Alarms could be switched off. She pulled that trick herself a million times as an ugly. Tali reached out toward the door, her hand shaking. If a siren started blaring, everyone would be staring at her and whispering as the wardens arrived and evacuated the tower. It would be a really bubbly end to her career as a crim. Some crim, she thought. She'd be a pretty bogus criminal if she couldn't set off an alarm every once in a while. She pushed the door open. It didn't make a sound. Tali stepped into the stairwell. The door closed behind her, muffling the tumult of the party. In the sudden quiet, she could feel her heart pounding in her chest and hear her own breath, still ragged from the chase. The beat of the music seemed to leak under the door, making the concrete floor shudder. The figure sat on the stairs a few steps up.
You made it.
It was a boy's voice, indistinct behind the mask.
Made it where? This party?
No, Tali, through the door.
It wasn't exactly locked.
She tried to stare her way through the jeweled eyes of the mask. Who are you?
You don't recognize me? He sounded genuinely puzzled, as if he were an old friend, someone who wore a mask all the time. What do I look like? Tally swallowed and said softly, Special circumstances. Good. You remember. Tally could hear the smile in his voice. He was talking slowly and carefully, as if she were some kind of idiot. Of course I remember. Are you one of them? Do I know you? Tally couldn't recall any individual specials. In her memory, their faces all ran together into one cruel and pretty blur. Why don't you take a look? The figure didn't move to take off his mask. Go ahead, Tally. Suddenly, she realized what was going on here. Recognizing what the costume meant, chasing him across the party, braving the alarm door, all of it had been a test, some kind of recruitment. He was just sitting there, wondering if she would dare pull off his mask. Tally was sick of tests. Just stay away from me, she said. Tally, I don't work for special circumstances. I just want to live here in New Pretty Town. I'm not... Leave me alone, she shouted, clenching her fists. The cry echoed off the concrete walls, leaving a moment of silence, as if it had surprised them both. The music from the party drifted through the stairwell, muffled and timid. Finally, a sigh came through the mask, and he held up a crude leather pouch. I have something for you, if you're ready for it. Do you want it, Tally? I don't want anything from... Tally's voice trailed off. Soft shuffling sounds came from below them. Not the party. Someone was coming up the stairs. The two of them moved at the same time, peering over the handrail down the narrow stairwell shaft. A long way down, Tally saw flashes of gray silk and hands grasping the rails. Half a dozen people climbing the stairs incredibly fast, their footsteps barely audible over the muffled music. See you later, the figure said, standing. Tally blinked. He pushed her aside, spooked by the sight of real specials. So who was he? Before his fingers reached the doorknob, Tally snatched the mask from his face. He was an ugly. A real ugly. His face was nothing like the costumed fatties done up for the bash, with their big noses or squinty eyes. It wasn't just exaggerated features that made him different. It was everything. As if he were made of some utterly different substance. In those seconds, Tally's pretty perfect eyesight caught every gaping pore, the random tangles in his hair, the crude imbalance of his disjointed face. Her skin crawled at his imperfections, the tufts of teenage beard, his unsurged teeth, the eruptions on his forehead screaming out disease. She wanted to pull away, to put distance between herself and his unlucky, unclean, unhealthy ugliness. But somehow she knew his name. Croy? She said. Fall. Later, Tally, Croy said, snatching back his mask. He yanked open the door, and the noise of the party rushed into the stairwell as he darted through, the gray silk of his costume disappearing into the crowd. Tally just stood there as the door swung closed again, too stunned to move. Like her old sweater, she'd remembered ugliness all wrong. Croy's face was much worse than her mental image of the Smokies. His crooked smile, his dull eyes, the way his sweating skin carried angry red marks where the mask had pressed against it. But then the door slammed itself shut, and among the echoes, Tally heard the footsteps still climbing toward her. Real specials, on their way up, and for the first time all day, a clear thought went through her head. Run. She pulled open the door and plunged into the crowd. The elevator was just spilling open, and Tally stumbled into a clique of naturals, plastered with brittle leaves, walking last days of autumn, who shed yellows and reds as she shoved through them. She managed to keep her footing. The floor was sticky with spilled champagne, and caught another glimpse of the gray silk. Croy was headed toward the balcony and the crims. She tore after him. Tally didn't want anyone lurking her, panicking her at parties, tangling her memories when she needed to be bubbly. She had to catch Croy and tell him never to follow her again. This wasn't Uglyville or the smoke. He had no right to be here. He had no business stepping out of her ugly past. And there was another reason she was running. The specials. It had only taken a glimpse of them to put every cell in her body on high alert. Their inhuman speed repelled her, like watching a cockroach skitter across a plate. Croy's movements might have seemed unusual, his smoky confidence standing out in a party full of new pretties, but the specials were another species altogether. Tally burst out onto the balcony just in time to see Croy leap up onto the rail, waving his arms for a precarious moment. Then he got his balance, bent his knees, and pushed off into the night. She ran to the spot and leaned over. Croy was tumbling downward out of sight, his form swallowed by the darkness below. After a sickening moment, he reappeared, head over heels, gray silk catching the light of fireworks as he hoverboarded toward the river. Zane stood beside her, looking down. The invitation didn't say bungee jackets required, he murmured. Who was that, Tally? She opened her mouth, but an alarm began to howl. Tally spun around and saw the crowd parting. The group of specials were pouring through the stairwell door, slicing their way through confused new pretties. Their cruel faces weren't costumes any more than Croy's ugliness had been, and they were just as shocking to look at. The wolf-like eyes sent a chill through Tally, and their advance, as purposeful, as dangerous as hunting cats, made her body scream to keep running. At the other end of the balcony, she saw Paris, standing frozen next to the rail, awestruck by the spectacle. His safety sparklers were sputtering out at last, but the light on his bungee jacket collar glowed bright green. Tally pushed toward him through the other crims, judging the angles, knowing exactly when to jump. For a moment, the world became strangely clear, as if the sight of Croy's ugliness and her cruel pretty specials had removed some barrier between her and the world. Everything was bright and harsh, the details so sharp that Tally squinted as if dashing into a freezing wind. She hit Paris just right, her arms wrapping around his shoulders, her momentum lifting both of them up and over the balcony railing. They tumbled out of the light and into the blackness, Paris's costume flaring up one last time in the wind of their descent, the safety sparks bouncing from her face as cool as snowflakes. He was half screaming and half laughing, as if enduring an annoying but invigorating practical joke, cold water over the head. Halfway down, it occurred to Tally that the bungee jacket might not catch them both. She squeezed harder and heard Paris grunt as the lifters kicked in. The jacket pulled him upright, almost wrenching Tally's shoulders from their sockets. Her muscles were still powerful from their weeks of manual labor in the smoke. If anything, the operation had tuned them up. But she barely kept her grip as the jacket absorbed the velocity of their fall. Her arms slipped farther down until they were wrapped around Paris's waist, her fingers painfully entangled in the jacket's straps. As they came to a shuddering halt, Tally's feet brushed the grass, and she let go. Paris shot back up into the air, his knee catching Tally's brow and sending her staggering back into the darkness. She lost her footing, landing on a drift of fallen leaves that crunched beneath her. For a moment, Tally lay still. The pile of leaves smelled softly of earth and rot, like something old and tired. She blinked as something trickled into one eye. Maybe it was raining. She looked up at the party tower and the distant hot air balloons, blinking and catching her breath. She could make out a few figures peering down from the bright balcony 10 stories above. Tally wondered if any of them were specials. Paris was nowhere to be seen. She remembered bungee jumping as an ugly, how a jacket would carry you down a slope. He must have bounced down toward the river after Croy. Croy. She wanted to say something to him. Tally struggled to her feet and faced the river. Her head throbbed, but the clarity that had come over her as she'd thrown herself off the balcony hadn't faded. Her heart pounded as a burst of fireworks lit the sky, casting pink light and sudden shadows through the trees. Every blade of grass in sharp relief. Everything felt very real. Her intense revulsion at Croy's ugly face, her fear of the specials, the shapes and smells around her. It felt as if a thin plastic film had been peeled from her eyes, leaving the world with razored edges. She ran downhill, toward the mirrored band of the river and the darkness of Uglyville. "Croy!" she cried. The pink flower in the sky faded, and Tally tripped over the winding roots of an old tree. She stumbled to a halt. Something was gliding up out of the darkness. "Croy?" The fireworks had left green spots scattered across her vision. "You don't give up, do you?" He was on a hoverboard, a meter off the ground, feet spread for balance, looking comfortable. His gray silks had been replaced with pitch black, his cruel pretty mask discarded. Behind him, 2 other black-clad figures rode, younger uglies, wearing dorm uniforms and nervous looks. "I wanted..." Her voice trailed off. She'd followed him to say, "Go away, leave me alone, never come back," to scream at him. But everything had become so clear and intense. What she wanted now was to hold on to this bright focus. Croy's invasion of her world was part of that, she somehow knew. "Croy, they're coming," one of the younger uglies said. "What do you want, Tally?" he asked calmly. She blinked, uncertain, worried that if she said the wrong thing, the clarity might go away. The barrier would close again. She remembered what he'd offered in the stairwell. "You had something to give me?" He smiled and pulled the old leather pouch from his belt. "This?" "Yeah, I think you're ready for it. Only one problem. You'd better not take it from me right now. Wardens are coming. Maybe specials."
"Yeah, in about 10 seconds, the nervous ugly complained.
Croy ignored him. "But we'll leave it for you at Valentino 317. Can you remember that? Valentino 317. She nodded, then blinked again. Her head felt light.
Croy frowned. "I hope so."
He spun his board around in 1 graceful movement, and the other 2 uglies followed suit.
"Later. And sorry about your eye."
They darted away toward the river, veering off in 3 different directions as they disappeared into the darkness. "Sorry about my what?" she asked softly. Then Tally found herself blinking again, her vision blurring. She reached up to touch her forehead. Her fingers came away sticky, and more dark blotches dribbled into her palm as she stared at it, dumbfounded. She finally felt the pain, her head throbbing in time with her heartbeat. The collision with Paris's knee must have opened up her forehead. Her fingers traced a line of blood that dripped around her brow and down 1 cheek, as hot as tears. Tally sat down on the grass, suddenly shaking all over. Fireworks lit the sky again, turning the blood on her hand bright red, each drop a little mirror reflecting the explosion overhead. There were hover cars in the sky now, lots of them. Tally felt something slipping away as she bled, something she'd wanted to keep hold of.
"Tally!"
Looking up, she saw Paris, chuckling as he climbed the hill.
"Now that was not a bubbly move, Tallywah. I almost wound up in the river." He mimed drowning, grasping at water and slipping under.
She found herself giggling at his performance, her weird shakiness turning bubbly now that Paris was here.
What's the matter? Can't you swim?
He laughed and sank to the grass beside her, fighting with the straps of the bungee jacket.
I'm not dressed for it.
He rubbed one shoulder.
Also, ow, on the clinginess.
Tally tried to remember why jumping off the tower had seemed like such a good idea. But the sight of her own blood had left her brain missing, and she just wanted to sleep. Everything was harsh and shiny.
Sorry. Just warn me next time.
Fireworks exploded overhead, and Paris squinted at her, his face beautifully puzzled.
What's with the blood?
Oh, yeah. Your knee whacked into me when you bounced.
Isn't it bogus? Not very pretty making.
He reached out and squeezed her arm softly. Don't worry, Tally. I'll ping a warden car. There's tons out tonight. But one was already coming. It passed silently overhead, running lights casting a red tinge on the grass around them. A spotlight picked them out. Tally sighed, letting the uncomfortable shininess of everything slip away. She realized now why it had been such a bogus day. She'd been trying way too hard, worrying about how the Crims would vote and what to wear, more serious than bubbly. No wonder the party crashers had driven her over the edge. She giggled, literally, over the edge. But everything was okay now. With the uglies and cruel pretties gone, and Paris here to take care of her, a restful feeling settled over Tally. Funny how that kick to the head had left her brain missing for a moment. Actually, talking to those uglies like they mattered. The hover car landed nearby, and two wardens jumped out and headed over, one with a first aid kit in hand. Maybe while they were fixing her head, Tally thought, she could get some eye surge like Shay's. Not exactly the same, which would be bogus, but sort of matching. She looked up into the wardens' middle pretty faces, calm and wise and knowing what to do. The look of concern on their faces made the blood all over her face feel less shaming. They gently led her to the car and sprayed new skin onto the wound, giving her a pill to stop the swelling. When she asked about bruises, they laughed and said the operation took care of that. No more bruises ever.